virtuous Radha to Yashoda's nurse Mukhara and said, "O elderly one, here is your son-in-law's Vrishabhanu's daughter."
This must be the way Radha's second lotus and Vishakha appeared in Gokul Vrindavan.
No, no! Jatila found her floating in the Yamuna.
Oh, I did not know that.
Who found the Vidya's first daughter as she was floating in the river's current? Bhishmaka.
Alas, the cruelty of fate. Who has separated these two sisters?
My daughter, fate then has reunited them. In this way, fate's mercy may be seen.
And how did this happen?
Chandravali was the granddaughter of Karala. Jambavan, who lived in the caves of Govardhan Hill and the Vindhya Hills, kidnapped the five-year-old Chandravali and forcefully took her from Kundina city. He did this on the orders of the goddess Durga, who was then staying in the Vindhya Hills.
This goddess Durga is the daughter of Yashoda, in other words, who Kamsa tried to kill by throwing her on the ground. After Maharaj Vasudeva brought her back to Mathura, and after King Kamsa unsuccessfully tried to kill her, she escaped to the Vindhya Hills, which is where she was living all the time during Krishna's pastimes, actually.
I have heard from my father's mouth that although the gopis headed by Chandrabhanu's daughter Chandravali and the Dwarka queen headed by Bhishmaka's daughter Rukmini are expansions of the same spiritual potency, nevertheless, their forms are separate and distinct. Now, it is said that with the aid of the Yogamaya potency, each gopi is identical with a specific queen, and each pair of gopi and queen is a single person in a single form. It must be so. Later I shall perhaps understand it. What can I understand now of these confidential matters? It is not that the Yogamaya potency forcibly prevented the marriage of Govardhan and the other gopis, Chandravali and the other gopis.
Yes, the gopis simply thought that these girls were the wives. In fact, they never even saw each other.
Then it is not at all surprising that these eight girls have such deep love for Lord Krishna.
What to speak of these eight girls? What doe-eyed girl in Gokula did not love Lord Krishna?
Jai. Srila Rupa Goswami, Jai. So anyway, that's taken directly from Lalita Madhava of Srila Rupa Goswami, revealing quite a few things. Perhaps we should take a break now, I guess. I'll just explain, just so you sort of get it clear what was the points that were made there. Firstly, that Radharani was the daughter of Vrishabhanu, and Chandravali was the daughter of Chandrabhanu, but they were removed from the wombs of their mothers and placed in the womb of the wife of Mount Vindhya. So then they appeared as twin sisters, but then Putana stole them along with Lalita, Padma, Vajra, Shaibya, and Shyama. So Putana, when Putana came to Vrindavan, she was carrying those girls. Then she came, tried to kill Krishna, but Krishna killed her. And as when her body crashed to the ground, those five girls, or six girls actually, with Chandravali, as she was flying, as Putana was flying, leaving the palace of Vindhya, then Mount Vindhya's priest chanted a demon-killing mantra. And Putana heard that. It didn't kill her, but it frightened her. So she dropped Chandravali. Chandravali fell into a river and was picked up by Bhishmaka. Anyone know who Bhishmaka is? Bhishmaka is the father of Rukmini. And Rukmini and Chandravali are the same person. Or Rukmini can be, it's expressed that she's an expansion. But as we heard, it's being stated that they she wasn't exactly an expansion, she was actually the same person, identical, in the same body. So Chandravati was dropped, but then when Putana was killed, then Radharani, Lalita and these other gopis, they were there on Putana's chest. But Purnamasi, orchestrating the pastimes, Purnamasi came running in, jumped up on Putana's chest, took away those young girls, and then gave them to the mothers, the older gopis in Vrindavan, secretly. So, and then another thing which is often not understood is that daughter of Yashoda, who was taken by Vasudev back to the prison of Kamsa, and which then Kamsa came in and Kamsa tried to throw the girl on the stone floor and kill her, but she slipped out of his hands and went flying up into the sky and then told him that it's too late now. So she, after telling Kamsa that, she then went to Vindhya, to the Vindhya hills, and she stayed there. And in fact, in those Vindhya hills, there's a number, there's one particularly, I don't know the name of it offhand, but there's one very big Durga temple. It's one of the main Durga temples in India. And that is where Durga, that young girl, actually went and stayed after slipping out of the hands of Kamsa. So the Subhadra who was married by Arjuna, who's also Yogamaya, she's the expansion of Purnamasi in Dwaraka. So she's another girl altogether. And then Srila Rupa Goswami says that Previously I understood that Chandravali and Rukmini are expansions of the same potency, but their forms are separate and distinct. There's Chandravali, then there's Rukmini. But he says that now it's said that through the agency of Yogamaya, that each gopi is identical with a specific queen, and each pair of gopi and queen is a single person in a single form. Of course, this is all very, we're getting into like rather intimate and quite deep areas of Krishna consciousness. But as Rupa Goswami explains later on in the play, after Krishna left Vrindavan, Rukmi, who was also the he was the brother of Rukmini and also the son of Bhishmaka. Rukmi came and kidnapped Chandravali and took her back to Kundina city. And there everyone forgot that she'd been away for so many years. And everyone thought that, oh, this is Rukmini. But then later, Krishna came and kidnapped Rukmini. But actually Rupa Goswami is explaining here that this was actually Chandravali in person, not just an expansion. Any questions or comments at this point? So let's just continue on in 15 minutes. Don't worry, I won't go too far over time next time. And if you have any questions, maybe we can discuss later on in the next session or the session after. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam, which are mentioned by Srila Jiva Goswami as verses which express Krishna's glory in very appropriate ways. The first was 3.2.23. Now, I'd suggest, just for your own information, I'd suggest that you look up the actual verse itself, read the verse in purport in Srimad Bhagavatam. I assume the majority of you have Srimad Bhagavatam, or at least have access to it, because it's a very important verse. So now we'll take
I'll just tell you what the second of the five verses is saying. The second one is 10:14:38. You already noted the number. Of course, you will have noted that the verses are not exactly in chronological order as they appear in Srimad Bhagavatam, but that's Srila Jiva Goswami has put them in this order. So 10:14:38. This is Lord Brahma, the prayers of Lord Brahma, immediately after the Brahma Vimohana Leela, when Lord Brahma stole the cowherd boys and calves. But he got corrected in a very dramatic way by Lord Krishna. So in that verse, Lord Brahma says, Jananta eva janantu, kim bahuktya name prabho, manaso vapushova cho, vaibhavam tava gochara. There are people who say, I know everything about Krishna. Let them think that way. As far as I'm concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. O my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they're all beyond the reach of my body, mind, and words. This is Lord Brahma praying in a very humble mood. The basic message of the verse is that some people may say that, oh, I know God, I understand, I know all these things. You sometimes meet them when you're on Sangatan. They already know everything, but unfortunately they already know practically nothing. It's like a disease. So anyway, there are people who say, oh, I know these things, I know Krishna, I've been brought up on it. So he says, let them think like that. It's up to them. But as far as I'm concerned, your opulences are just beyond me. You're completely beyond me. And this is Lord Brahma speaking. Not just one of us very small persons, but Lord Brahma himself. That you're just beyond me altogether. So that's the second verse. We'd like you to know just that the basic idea of what is being expressed there. Then 10:12:11. It's a very nice verse. There's like an order going up in these verses, starting with the verse about Putana, and then going up to the last verse. So 10:12:11. This is spoken about the cowherd boys. Itam satam brahma sukhana bhutya dasyam gatanam paradaivatena mayashitanam naradarakena sakam vijahru krita punya punja. So it said there that in different ways all the cowherd boys used to play with Krishna. Krishna, who is the source of the Brahman effulgence for jnanis desiring to merge into that effulgence, who's the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the devotees who have accepted eternal servitorship, and who, for ordinary persons, is simply another ordinary child. But these cowherd boys, having accumulated the results of pious activities for many lives, were able to associate in this way with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can one explain their good fortune? So the basic idea is that the cowherd boys are playing with Krishna, but Krishna is not just some ordinary cowherd boy. This is the same absolute truth that the jnanis are trying to merge into with great difficulty. He's the same Supreme Lord who all the aspiring devotees are trying so hard to approach and surrender to and serve. But these cowherd boys are just playing with him. And he's the same God. He's the same person who ordinary people, they don't understand. they may think that he's just a little coward boy. They may think he's a figment of the imagination. God, what's God? Where's God? But actually, this Krishna, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But these boys are just playing with him. I'm sure you've heard the example that I've personally given on numerous occasions. Krishna would wrestle with the coward boys, but because they're his devotees, he wouldn't want to beat them. He would let them beat him. So sometimes they would have team wrestling matches, and two of them would choose cowherd boys to form their teams. But no one would choose Krishna. And in the end, someone would say to one of the leaders, "Why don't we choose Krishna?" And that leader would say, "No, we don't want Krishna. He always loses." So they're just playing with him. So how can you explain their good fortune? What did they do? I mean, what would you have to do to get that position? You can't explain it. So he says, Krita Punya Punja. The results of pious activities for many, many lives. Of course, those pious activities, they are not pious activities in the sense of helping the poor people and, you know, mundane pious activity, feeding the hungry people with ordinary food, giving people clothes and opening hospitals, not that sort of pious activity. But there's a type of pious activity which is called, it's a little technical term, bhakti unmukhi sukriti. Sukriti means a pious activity. And bhakti unmukhi means it's a pious activity which is of the nature of bhakti. Meaning, like we are doing food for life. So many people are eating prasad every day. So that's transcendental food. I was just checking, actually, and the other day I came across a statement by Prabhupada where he says that if people eat prasadam once in their life, then their next life they'll get at least a human birth. So it's certainly a very special activity, very beneficial activity. But it's of the nature of bhakti. They don't know, but it's of the nature of bhakti. So it's called bhakti unmukhi, U-N-M-U-K-H-I. Bhakti unmukhi sukriti, S-U-K-R-T-I. So it was those types of pious activities that the cowherd boys had performed for many, many lifetimes. And then they reaped a devotional result. They became the direct associates of Krishna. Then, fourth verse, now we're going up another stage, 10.9.20. Ne mam virincho na bhavo, na shir ap yanga samshaya, prasadam lebire gopi, yata prapa vimuktidat. Neither Lord Brahma, nor Lord Shiva, nor even the goddess of fortune, who's always the better half of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the deliverer from this world, such mercy as received by Mother Yasoda. We're going up another stage now. We were in Sakyaras, now we're going up to Vatsalyaras, parental rasa. So even Brahma Shiva, even the goddess of fortune, who's considered the better half of the Supreme Lord, who is that Supreme Lord? That's Narayan. Not Krishna, but Narayan. So they cannot get the mercy. They cannot. Not just that they haven't been able to or somehow didn't. But they cannot get the mercy that Mother Yasoda got. This is stated in regard to the Damodar Leela, which Brihat Mridanga Prabhu is going to relate to you later on sometime. So I won't go into it now, but in the course of that pastime, Mother Yasoda got such mercy that these other great, great personalities, they couldn't get it. Then finally, the most significant one is 10:47:60. Nayam shion ga u nitanta rate prasada saryoshi tam nalina ganda rucham kutonya rasot savesya bujadanda grahita kanta labda shisham ya uragad vrajasundarina. When Lord Sri Krishna was dancing with the gopis in the Rasa Leela, the gopis were embraced by the arms of the Lord. This transcendental favor was never bestowed upon the goddess of fortune or other consorts in the spiritual world. Indeed, never was such a thing imagined, even by the most beautiful girls in the heavenly planets, whose bodily aroma and luster resemble the lotus flower. And what to speak of worldly women, who are very beautiful according to material estimation. So these are the five verses. I hope you've got the basic idea. The basic idea in this last verse was that Lord Krishna in the Rasa dance, he embraced the gopis in a mood of conjugal love, transcendental, amorous embrace. So even the goddess of fortune was not able to achieve that. Even the most beautiful girls in the heavenly planets couldn't even imagine it. And what to speak of women who by worldly standards, standards of this world that, or this planet that we're on, what to speak of them. So the gopis, ultimately we understand the gopis got the greatest mercy. So we'd like you to learn the basic messages, and it's entirely up to you, but I would advise you, it would be a good idea to read through these verses and purports in Srimad Bhagavatam and try and appreciate the points that are being made, because they're very important points. So now, as far as Putana is concerned, the first of these verses is regarding Putana. Aho bakiyam stanakala kutam jigramshaya payad api asadvi. So Putana got such mercy that Uddhava, when he was thinking about it, he was simply crying. He was completely overwhelmed, actually. That what mercy! Krishna is so merciful, so extremely merciful. In fact, he's so merciful that it's inconceivable. We find that in this pastime with Putana, also with Kaliya, the same thing applies, that the mercy they got is completely disproportionate when you consider what they did, what they were like. You just can't relate the two, what they were like and the mercy they got. You can't figure out how did they get it. So the idea is that it is mercy. Krishna is a person, and if he wants to be merciful, then he can be as merciful as he likes, regardless of the circumstances. And we shouldn't worry if it appears inconsistent in certain regards, or why am I not getting this mercy? Putana got it, why not me? I'm not that bad, am I? Kaliya. So, now as far as Putana is concerned, it is a fact that, as we mentioned in her previous birth as Ratnamala, sister or daughter of Bali Maharaj, she, when she first saw Lord Vamana, then some positive attraction towards the Supreme Lord definitely arose in her heart, in a maternal mood. But when you consider, you know, that was there in her mind, in her heart. But when you consider the rest of the stuff that was in her heart, there was a lot of rubbish there. It was really, her heart was very contaminated. Very, very contaminated. She was a first-class demon. One of our, actually Sri Dhananda Maharaj in the 11th canto, he refers to Hiranyakashipu and company, and I think Putana fits into the and company part, as stalwart demons. They were just, you know, first grade. You just couldn't complain, you know, I mean, you couldn't find fault in their demoniac-ness. They were really fully demoniac, practically. She's referred to in that verse as Asadvi. Sadvi is the feminine form of sadhu. Sadhu means a saintly man. Sadvi means a saintly lady, like Devahuti in Srimad Bhagavatam. That word is used, sadvi. It's used in one of the verses to describe her, saintly lady. So Putana was asadvi. Ah, before a word means not. So she was not a saintly lady. She was not a saintly lady. She was a big, big demon. But what mercy she got, isn't it just astonishing? She was given a position like a mother, specifically nurse. She was given the position of nurse in Goloka. Why? Not just because Krishna decided to, we were talking about how Krishna can be as merciful as he likes. Not just Krishna decided in some sort of whimsical way to be merciful to her, but he was recognizing that she had that sentiment, that motherly sentiment. She had many other sentiments, nasty sentiments, but she had that sentiment. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada makes the point, 3.2.23 purport, that Krishna, he's so nice. He's such a nice person, such a kind person, that when he looks into a person's heart, if there's just a little trace like this with Putana, even amidst so much nonsense, Krishna may overlook the nonsense and just accept that little bit. And what is the prime example of that? Putana. Putana. Therefore Uddhava, who is a great authority, he is saying, how am I going to find someone more merciful than him? I can't. And now he's gone. And what is the evidence? What is his qualification? He gave Putana the position of nurse in Goloka. So, Krishna, in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verse 29. Anyone here familiar with chapter 9, verse 29? Samoham sarvabhuteshu na me dveshosti na priyaha. Krishna is saying that I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I'm equal to all. But one who renders service to me in devotion, he's a friend to me, he's in me, and I'm a friend to him. Now when we say that Krishna can be merciful to whoever he wants, one thing we should understand very clearly is that that this concept of Krishna being merciful applies only to devotees. With devotees, Krishna is merciful. And sometimes he's causelessly merciful in a way which may be disproportionate to the real qualification of the devotee. But when it comes to the non-devotees, then samoham sarvabhuteshu na me dveshosti na priyaha. He doesn't envy anyone. He's not partial to anyone. He's equal to everyone. That applies with non-devotees. Actually, with non-devotees, Krishna relates as Paramatma. So, a little technical Bhagavad Gita information. Chapter 9, verse 29, the first two lines Krishna is expressing the mood of the super soul, Paramatma. But in line 3 and line 4 of that verse, what is it? Ye bhajanti tamam bhakcha mai te teshu chapyaham. He's expressing the mood of Bhagavan. There's Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. You don't want to get too technical, but Paramatma means the super soul who's supervising this material world. So he's equal to everyone. You simply get what you